Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Todd Weller. He is a vice president for corporate development for a company called Hexis, H-E-X-I-S, Hexis Cyber Solutions. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Good morning. Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, before the interview, we were chatting back and forth, and I told Todd that, you know, the listeners really don't care much about you or me or anything or the rain outside or even the Nationals. They care about what Hexis can do for them. What can they do? What kind of problems can they solve for my listeners? And I think it's a good practical way to start the discussion on cybersecurity, and that's why we brought Todd in here. Todd just flew in from Las Vegas or took a train or drove or something, and he attended a little event called Black Hat. And I thought it'd be kind of important to bring in someone from Black Hat and say, well, geez, really, what went on there for 3 days? Was it just drinking, or was it something important, or how does this affect my listeners? How does it affect my govies and the people who may have some interest in cybersecurity? So, Todd, tell us a little about your background and about this company, H-E-X-I-S, Hexis, please.
Sure. So I've been with Hexis just over 4 months. I think I bring an interesting perspective. Prior to that, I spent 17 and a half years as a Wall Street analyst covering the security sector for much of that time. So I think a unique blend of experience there. At Hexis, I'm doing a lot of analyst relations visibility with the community. Hexis itself is a relatively newer company on the scene. It's a startup within a well-established company. Our parent company, KEYW Corp, is well-known in these circles as they're a key provider of IT services to the federal government. And 90% of KEYW's business is with the intelligence community. Significant cyber expertise, a lot of software and systems development, a lot of cyber training. So a lot of the folks that for the government that do offensive and defensive missions get trained actually one floor up from me. And so Hexis was gestated out of KEYW's efforts to say, we have this cyber expertise, how can we extend that into a commercial products business? And so that was the genesis of Hexis, which was officially formed actually just over a year ago as a separate subsidiary. So we just celebrated our first birthday.
H-E-X-I-S Cyber, C-Y-B-E-R.com. For more information, you can read blogs there. You can find out their story and find out a little bit more of some of the products they have. So spent 3 days in Las Vegas. Good, bad. Would you go again? Do you recommend our listeners go out there for Black Hat? Or what was the value of even going out to Black Hat?
Yeah, so great question there. I usually think 2 days in Vegas is plenty. So my thesis there was reinforced, but I was out there for four. Black Hat's one of the key industry conferences. And, you know, you mentioned with the lead-in of why the listeners should care, why anybody should care. I've covered the security space for, 18 years now. And I can't remember a year where we've had this many high-profile threats, right, ranging from Target to eBay to PF Chang's. These threats are increasing in volume and severity, and they're having real impacts on both end users and corporations. Target just indicated they're going to spend $148 million on the breach costs, and it's having significant negative impacts on their business. eBay had to lower their second half targets to Wall Street because their business slowed. So cyber attacks are going to continue to increase, and it's going to impact all of us. So I think that's a reason to care. Black Hat is a very interesting conference. From an industry perspective, RSA is probably the biggest conference of the year, but that's more of a marketing kind of promotional type conference, whereas Black Hat has historically been a practitioner's conference. So it's evolved a bit. In the old days, it was hardcore hackers. You would go out there and they tell you to turn off your phones, turn off the Wi-Fi because you don't want to get yourself breached. But it's a very important conference, and I think as a cyber company and as a practitioner, everybody should attend that because you get good visibility into key trends in cyber. Some of the stuff, frankly, is a little bit can be a little bit scary. There was a presentation on how to hack into a hotel room and control all the automated features. How you could hack into an airplane's Wi-Fi system, kind of things like that.
You know, what I've noticed over the years is this term hack. four or five years ago, it had a connotation of something evil. But now people are doing hackathons, and they're doing hackathons for public good and raising money. And I just think it's a strange change of the implications of a word like hack. And I, when I think of Black Hat, too, I used to think of 5 years ago, a bunch of guys in black T-shirts and flip-flops and beards and attacking each other. So is that what the crowd looks like there? Or are the guys in three-piece suits now? Or what do they look like
out
there?
No, it's still a lot of black T-shirts. In fact, I came home with two black T-shirts myself and a white one because I thought it was cool. But you forgot the earrings and the tattoos. So there's still a lot of that. But the conference is starting to evolve a bit where more of the you know, you're seeing some more CISOs and you're seeing a greater presence by companies. They moved the venue. I think before it was at Caesars. I'm not 100% sure on that, but they moved it to Mandalay Bay because the conference has grown in size. So a lot of people have said that RSA has morphed into something, you know, big, whereas Black Hat's becoming the new RSA. And there was another conference in concert with Black Hat called DEF CON, which is becoming the harder core kind of hacker conference.
I work with young software developers every single day. In fact, yesterday we were arguing about Einstein for 2 hours. These guys love to argue and go into just ridiculous detail. And you would think that they would bring a keynote speaker in kind of similar to them. But no, the keynote speaker was a guy named Dan Geer, who he's a CISO, a CISO. And he works for, guess what, a federal-related company in Qtel, I think. And he talked about public policy recommendations, which is amazing because you have all these really, really very detail-oriented theory. And they have this kind of quasi-government guy talking about security. And by the way, this guy doesn't even have a cell phone, does he?
No. So I sat through the keynote, and honestly, that was my first kind of experience with Dan live, and I thought it was a very interesting keynote. I mean, some of the themes that I found interesting were, you know, he talked about cybersecurity technology being dual use, meaning it could be used for good or bad. And he, you know, he said that's not too dissimilar to using other tools like a scalpel or a hammer. Going back to your point of hacking and how you think about that, you know, one of the themes he mentioned was that the cybersecurity tool set these days is favoring the offense. And he actually quoted a former NSA deputy director who said, if we were to score cybersecurity today like soccer, it'd be 462 to 456 with 20 minutes into the game. So all offense these days. And so I thought those, and he had a variety of other interesting points around, you know, the U.S. should pay up significantly to corner the market for zero-day vulnerabilities, that software that gets abandoned. I don't think he mentioned it specifically, but for example, Microsoft end-of-life Windows XP, that created a big security stir earlier this year. So he felt like in that instance, the software should be open sourced. Software companies being held liable for damage for their products, and then embedded software, which, you know, big theme is the Internet of Things, right? There's more embedded software in cars and airplanes, et cetera. And he indicated that should include a remote management interface to be able to update it, or you should have a limited lifetime. You can't let these sit out forever because vulnerabilities will emerge.
You know, if you are listening to this while there's snow on the ground and you're sending out email at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can go to YouTube and you can watch Dan give his presentation. And I sure did. And I listened to it carefully. And what's interesting is he suggested also that the government should compensate people who discover flaws. Well, I'm sure that was well received in that crowd, wasn't it? I mean, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think he mentioned that, you know, before it was a hobby and now it's become a full time job to find these 0 days. And you're seeing companies pay for flaws. There's actually some startups that their whole business model is around paying for security flaws. And, you know, the important thing with that is then, you know, what you do with that information and making sure you properly disclose it. I'm sure you may have saw one interesting news item that came out last week was the big breach reported by a company called Hold Security about, you know, 1.2 billion, you know, passwords being taken by Russia. There was a lot of controversy about that because the company didn't disclose a lot of information about who was attacked, and people felt like they were using that as a marketing campaign. But yeah, that was an interesting point. He said, you know, the U.S. should pay 10x current market rates for these 0 days, and that would have a big positive impact on security.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about Hold Security and some of the comments that have been made since that was broadcast. About 1.2 million credentials were stolen. People were scratching their head going, really? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Todd Weller, Vice President Corporate Development at Hexis Cyber Solutions. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Todd Weller. He's Vice President Corporate Development at Hexis Cyber Solutions. You may not have heard of that company before, but you can Google it at H-E-X-I-S. And H-E-X-I-S-Cyber.com is where you find it. When I lived in Brazil, I used to go to Rio de Janeiro on the weekends, and they started talking about condo prices there in terms of Bs, 1B and 2B, and it meant million of the currency down there. And I made the mistake of, in the first block, we talked about credential violations, and I thought it was a million, but it's 1.2 billion. I mean, that's a lot of username and passwords, isn't it?
It's I think, the biggest that's been reported. And while there's been some controversy over the information, it you know, was verified by other security experts. I think, you know, the challenge with this is, right, when eBay gets violated, we know it's eBay. And you know if you're a user or not, and you know your username or password. In this case, there's been no disclosure. You know, it's apparently multiple websites. We don't know which websites have been violated or breached. And so we as users are vulnerable, but we don't know where. And so we should probably all go out and change our username and passwords, which you know, can become a pain. Yeah. But I think it's going to become the new reality.
I wrote for the Washington Post every week for 10 years, and one of my colleagues there was a guy named Brian Krebs. And he's a popular security guy. And he vetted this guy from Hold Security. He said, no, this founder, this person who came up with these numbers is credible, but he's not very well known. And there's no way to check if these if it's really a billion or 2 billion, half a billion, or how many. And did you buy that figure, 1.2 billion? Or is that just something someone made up? And he's not available for interviews now, and he can't detail it.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I don't know if I buy it or not. What I do know is that whether this is accurate or not, in 17 plus years of covering the space, I've never seen more outbreaks than I've seen this year that are high profile, and you know, they've impacted me. So I just think the way tech trends are going, it's going to continue. And so I think that's leading actually to a paradigm shift in the security market, where it's, you know, it's no longer if you're going to be hacked, it's when. And how often? And that's the new reality. I think what you're also going to see, and this will affect, you know, more of us as users and consumers, is you're going to see a lot more companies go to two-factor authentication. They're going to require you not only to enter a username and password, but a one-time PIN from your mobile phone, you know, for example. So I would look for that area of security to start picking up.
Payne, I have a spreadsheet with 154 usernames and passwords just for my stuff, and I'm just Joe Sixpack. I don't know how people can even manage all the passwords anymore. It gets kind of crazy.
It's hard as a security guy, and maybe I shouldn't say this on air, but you know, one of the things you do with passwords is you start to make them more complex, right? It's got to have a capital letter. It's got to have some sort of symbol. It's got to have a number. And then, you know, you can't use your first name or last name or something. And so I start having passwords that I don't remember either. And so I'm not going to tell you where it is, but I've written down several passwords as well.
So if you you close your eyes and you're on that plane coming back from Las Vegas and you're thinking about, well, I don't know, whatever happened. I always go to conferences and go, no, what are the mountaintops? What are the big things? And maybe the introductory speech by Gear was something big. But what are two or three things that really jump out of you after spending 3 or 4 days in Las Vegas and not gambling away your fortune?
Yeah, and I will tell you that on the way home, on the flight home, the eyes were closed. So that is legitimate. But you know, some of the themes that jumped out, advanced threat protection has been and remains a hot theme. And the issue there is that these advanced threats are getting through legacy-based security technologies. So there's this need to increase your investment in next-generation solutions. So these are solutions that are going to give you visibility into the advanced threat, what's going on your endpoints, what's going on in your networks. There's a lot of activity going on in this market right now, new vendors popping up left and right, and there's a significant renaissance going on the endpoint. So we're all familiar with Symantec and McAfee as your traditional antivirus vendors, but those solutions are no longer getting the job done, and so you're seeing solutions like our Hexis HawkIG and a range of other solutions. So that was one thing. The second was around response and the need for automation. So if you look at security and how it's most often thought about, there's preventive prevention, there's detection and response. Response has been the most underinvested area of security. And so with the volume of attacks, as I mentioned, it's going to continue to happen more and more. There's need for increased investment in people, process, and technology. We're seeing a theme of shifting from incident response to continuous response and increasing use of automation. So one of the presentations out there, Bruce Shire gave, talked about the need for the use of automation. And then the final area that I thought was a hot theme, and I think you'll see this continue and will emerge as an even hotter theme over the next year into 2015, is threat intelligence and security analytics. You hear a lot about big data as a theme across tech in general, and you see it in security. So companies want to look at all the data they're getting from the infrastructure. They want to look at it over long periods of time. And so there's this desire for threat intelligence. So that's everything from keeping up with what are known bad, attacks, like known bad IP addresses, known bad domains. Also a desire for more advanced context. Is a hacker targeting my organization or myself personally? And you can even go so far as companies that will tell you who the adversary is. You know, it is someone from country XYZ that is attacking you or company. So I think there's going to be a lot of focus for this. And the last thing I'll just say about analytics and threat intelligence, if you look at the time to detection or the time to compromise to the time to detection, it's well over 200 days. So there's a significant gap between when a company is breached and when they figure it out. You have to narrow that window. And that also means you have to look at a lot of data because the advanced threat is in your network for a long period of time.
There's a couple of terms that are floating around there. One is called an advanced persistent threat, APT. Is that what you're referring to, or is that a separate category?
Well, I call it advanced threats. I mean, advanced persistent threat tends to be a definition that's changed over time. You know, I think originally it was focused on, you know, what nation states were doing. But I think one is, you know, threats are more advanced, although if you look, some of these attacks, the methods being used aren't necessarily that advanced, right? It's spear phishing. It's being able to get somebody's credential. But the persistent angle is it's something that occurs over a long period of time, right? In the early 2000s, we had these massive virus and worm outbreaks, Code Red and NIMDA. You know, I used to think that the antivirus companies did it on purpose to generate revenue to close the quarter. But we're no longer seeing these widespread. You know, they're very stealthy attacks. They occur over long periods of time, and they're targeted. They're going after specific information. So that's the way I think about advanced threats these days.
The company is HEXIS, Hexis Cyber Solutions. If you go to YouTube, type those phrases in there, you get all kinds of videos. I was watching a video this morning. And I forget the person who was talking about persistent threats or something or other, and he said, never send a human to do a machine's job. Maybe that should be on your business card, but I think I get it now. I mean, things are happening so quickly, you can't just, okay, tomorrow I'll tell a security person that XYZ. No, you have to hit back.
I think there's an interesting point, and we use that phrase, you know, never send a human to do a machine's job, and we have a slide in our presentation related to that. And that's because, again, the volume of attacks continues to increase. Companies have underinvested in response, whether it's the people and the processes or the technology. And so, our view and my view as from an analyst perspective is that you have to shift your mindset from it's not if we're going to be attacked, it's when, and it's going to occur more frequently. And so companies need to invest more in response. And given the volume of what's going on, you need more automation. You know, it's no different than other, you know, areas we've seen automation. Airplanes were flown manually once, right? And people were scared of that, and then they embraced automation. So I definitely think you'll see increasing use of automation in security.
I write blogs, posts all the time. My current one is I'm working on one describing Amazon Redshift, which is a virtual data warehouse. And all of a sudden, your company has a scalable event data warehouse as well. And when I think of a warehouse, I view it in my world, it's usually with a corporation that needs to generate a report or something for compliance, and they separate from transactional data and then take a look at it. And what I want to do is take a break and come back and talk more about an event data warehouse and how that works and maybe how some of my listeners can take advantage of some of the technology you offer to overcome some of these advanced threats and some of these really surprisingly new and all kinds of varying types of attacks that they can be subjected to. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, Todd Weller, Vice President Corporate Development at Hexis Cyber Solutions. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Todd Weller, Vice President Corporate Development, Hexis Cyber Solutions, H-E-X-I-S, cyber.com. And you folks have a blog there because many of my listeners like to read blogs. Is there a blog at your company site there, Todd?
There is. It's just HexisCyber.com/blog.
Yeah, with the blog there. Are there blogs you read to keep up with this technology? Maybe my listeners can learn from some of your experience. Anyone you think have a lot of respect for? I respect Brian Krebs in the security area, that's for sure.
I think Brian does a lot of good work. I read John Olstick, who's with Enterprise Strategy Group and publishes for Network World. I also read a lot of other vendors' blogs, and you know, I find that to be an interesting source of information.
And everyone should know Brian, K-R-E-B-S. I mean, he's pretty well known in this area. Well, okay, so you're out at this conference, and you're standing at the booth meeting people, talking about your product. So what does Hexis have? What are my listeners? What's the takeaway? I mean, what does Hexis have that's different from others, and how can it prevent my listeners from advanced threats?
Yeah, so I think you know, with Hexis, we really have three key products. The flagship is HawkEye G, which is an advanced threat detection and response product. You know, HawkEye AP is another product, which is more of an analytics platform. And then we recently launched a new line of products called NetBeat, which is we're targeting small, mid-sized businesses, economical cyber hygiene. So there's a monitoring product and there's a network access control product. But as far as the advanced threat, HawkEye G is the key product to focus on. You know, I think what are the key differentiators? And this will tie into some of the themes we've talked about. You know, first, the system was built by cyber experts. It was built by people that are the advanced threat. They're the offensive experts. And, you know, knowing how these advanced attacks work helps you to be able to identify, you know, the digital exhaust that the advanced attack leaves behind. So I think that's a key differentiator. I think another one is really kind of we do have comprehensive detection capability. So, you know, there's multiple detection triggers we have. For example, a lot of telemetry coming from an endpoint. What's the behavior of this endpoint? You know, are there things in the registry or in the directory that shouldn't be there? You know, there's anomaly detection. Is the user logging in outside of what should be normal for that user? And our analytics will span 7 days of this is a profile to 6 months of data. That we're also, too, in addition to having our own detection, we think it's important to integrate with third-party detection. There's a lot of investment made in other products like, you know, FireEye, for example, and we'll be looking to integrate with them. I think the other angle is that we cover both the endpoint and the network. And I think that's important. If you think of an advanced threat today, a host or an endpoint might get infected. You might not catch that, but you might find that that host is communicating out to a botnet. And so we have capabilities to be able to see that on the network. And then the final thing I'd just say is that detection, there's a lot of companies that do that. Our biggest differentiator is our automated response capability. So the ability to say, you know, using automation to say, I've detected something, I'm going to remove malware, kill malware, remove the persistence from the endpoint in an automated fashion.
7 years ago, I had folks from VMware in the studio here, and virtualization's exploded. Now people apply virtualization to containers, to software development. They apply it to copy data management. They apply it to virtual desktops. They apply it to software-defined networks, all kinds of virtualization here. How does virtualization affect your job? Drive you crazy? Easier? Harder?
Yeah, I think it's just something as a security vendor you have to adapt to and be aware of and support. So, you know, we're already seeing instances where on an endpoint, customers want us to be able to support virtual desktop infrastructure from a company like Citrix or from a VMware. A lot of the security controls you need in virtual aren't really different than what you need in physical. But the way you go about them is different. And so it's interesting. Virtualization and VMware has been highly successful in the data center. And yet virtual security is still very early days. So you could look at a lot of the larger, for example, you know, firewall companies. You know, they're not selling a lot of virtual firewalls today, but that's changing. And it also, I think, you know, you have to look at new competitors, right? VMware is investing a lot in security today and looking to offer their own capabilities.
Let's bounce back to Black Hat. Last year, 7,500 attendees. This year, 8,000 attendees. 91 countries represented. And if you just, you know, look at the topics that were covered, there's everything there from Hadoop to USB devices, Bitcoin, home alarms, cell phones, IPv6, password protection. I guess one tangible item that may stick out to everyone listening is USB devices. That whole world's been changed in the last 2 weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. And, you know, I think, again, that comes down to access control. Are you going to trust that, you know, this USB device is plugged in? And, you know, when it does plug in, you know, for example, our HawkIG would be able to detect that this device is plugged in. Should it plug in? Has it plugged in before? Kind of thing. But, you know, it's interesting, too, with cloud and storage and things of that nature. I'm finding, at least personally, I'm not using USB, you know, sticks as much. And so I think you're going to see USB as a form factor for storage and making data portable start to diminish somewhat. Though I will tell you that I spent 15 and a half years as an analyst at one firm, and I was able to download my entire career of research work and notes onto one 9 gig USB drive.
Yeah. One thing that hit my radar, I don't know if it was in the radar for Black Hat, is the skimmers that popped up in Europe, where they physically put a hardware skimmer on an ATM machine, and you skim it, and they take that code, send it back to the United States, and then deplete your account that way. These skimmers, were these talked about at the conference at all, or is this just something in John Gilroy's crazy mind?
I don't think it's your crazy mind. I don't remember it being.
Well, we agree. I have a crazy mind, huh?
I don't recall, or I wasn't around when it was specifically talked about. It. I will tell you that I was aware of it, and I did not use one ATM when I was out there.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep, I was told to steer clear of the ATMs at Mandalay Bay, which I did.
It could be a proof of concept here, huh?
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to find out what's going on is that they're putting little tiny camera readers, and they read your PIN number, and in Europe it's fairly safe, and so they'll send it back to the United States. And this would be, I can remember years ago, there would be a wall of shame at the Black Hat. People would walk in and they go, hey, look at Todd here, and this is his, you know, his PIN number to his email. It really was amazing, wasn't it?
I was aware of that and made it a goal to not be included on that wall. And so to my knowledge, I was not included.
What is this digital exhaust? You mentioned earlier, and I wrote it down, and digital exhaust, I keep thinking of airplanes and airliners and chemtrails. So what is digital exhaust anyway?
Yeah, so if you think about it, again, an advanced threat is going to come in. Let's say it infects one user, right? That's all it needs. That's the opening into a customer's environment. From there, that malware is going to look to go to other systems. It has a goal, right? It's not to infect Todd's system. It's to get Hexus's core IP, for example. So it's going to, you know, infect my host, my laptop, then it's going to look to move around. And so as the advanced threat moves throughout a customer's environment, whether that's other endpoints, other servers, the network, it's going to leave signs of what we call digital exhaust. And, you know, this gets back again to, you know, the way this system was built. It was built by people that are experts in doing these advanced threats. They know how they work. They know how to do it. And so it was built to be able to kind of find those signs of digital exhaust. And that goes to one of your earlier comments about the event data warehouse. And that's kind of a key reason why we have that event data warehouse.
So what is an event data warehouse from a security perspective? I know from financial perspective. What about a security perspective?
Yeah, so, you know, an event data warehouse actually is just a database, right? It's just a big warehouse that stores lots of data. And so when our system was built, our offensive experts said, you know, we need to look at lots of data from endpoints and from the networks. We need to look at it for long periods of time. To do that, we need a high-performance database. And so that's what we have. It's a columnar database, can ingest significant amounts of data, can do it cost-effectively, and high performance, so a lot of compression. But, you know, that's just the event data warehouse is plumbing. It's a platform. What is important and kind of the secret sauce is the analytics that are put on top of that, you know, being able to have analytics that say, hey, you know, this login is an anomaly. This endpoint is compromised because of XYZ. That's what's critical.
Great answer. I'm sure there's listeners who love columnar information and some that don't. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about security and Black Hat and maybe digital exhaustion as well. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Todd Weller, Vice President Corporate Development at Hexus Cyber Solutions. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Todd Weller, Vice President Corporate Development for Hexus, H-E-X-I-S, Cyber Solutions. You go to YouTube and see the videos. You can go to their website and read the blog. And you can even follow you guys on Twitter. Is that right?
That is correct. So you can go to at Hexus, H-E-X-I-S, underscore cyber.
C-Y-B-E-R, and see what's going on. In fact, I went there this morning because I do my homework. And I saw all kinds of funny pictures from the show. You had Agent Smith there, huh? Is that what you had? What was that all about anyway?
That's part of our booth setup. So we have Agent Smith there.
And he's on YouTube, too, with this straight character playing that, right?
Yep. He's talking about what Hexus does and how, you know, you can't do it with humans and you have to operate at machine speeds. And we operate inside the network. And, you know, it's going back to what you said earlier, never send a human to do a machine's job.
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
Got a lot of interesting attention there.
Yeah. And that's in a room full of people like that with all those 8,000 people, how do you grab attention? That's always a challenge and not a very easy solution at all. Let's go back to this concept of a event data warehouse. And so what your company does is puts together an event data warehouse, and you can take a look and hold that as whether it's a valid event or not a valid event, or it's a set of actions that are valid or not valid, or what would the data warehouse actually include?
Yeah, so think about the data warehouse as a means to an end. The data warehouse is the physical repository where, you know, the key data points we think will tell you about that digital exhaust from your networks and your endpoints. We'll pull that information into the data warehouse. We'll run our analytics on top of that, looking for signs of malicious activity. Once you get that detection alert and there's confidence in that not being a false positive and that being really a malicious or piece of malware, then it comes down to the automated response capability. And so we have a countermeasure manager that can do everything from say, hey, we have a detection event, let's go out and investigate to make sure that there's malware and the system's compromised, to being able to expire a user's credentials, to being able to remove malware from a user's PC or laptop surgically. A lot of companies, what they'll do when they're infected is they'll just say, we're taking this device offline and we're going to re-image it. That's costly. Number one, the cost to do it. Number two, you're taking a user away from their job, so you have lost productivity. So
same vulnerability as well if you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Speaking of detection, some listeners are trying to detect if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. And, what I've designed is a scientific 10-question test that will prove beyond a reasonable doubt whether you're a card-carrying nerd or a geek or maybe even normal. We don't know about that. So I'm asking these questions. I ask everyone, Todd. So first question is, so I break into your house this evening, how many old-school desktops do we see floating around there?
You know, I would say one. Yeah, you might argue two, but I'm not sure this is old-school because it's a traditional desktop, but it's one of these high-end gaming devices.
Oh, that my gamers, son uses. That's a special exception for gamers. Hope it isn't water-cooled. I mean, that's the real question. You personally, how many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
Me personally, one.
That's not enough. Do you have a personal Twitter account?
I do, but okay. I don't use it that much.
Do you have a personal blog?
I don't. Okay. I do have a blog on the Hexus site, but not a personal blog.
What, from a security perspective, what kind of cell phone do you have?
I have a Apple. We are an Apple family household.
So nothing to do with security, just ease of use. And what is the most popular app you've used on that in the last 30 days?
Yeah, this is not going to be that exciting. I think it's NewsBlur. But that will transition to fantasy football apps in about three weeks.
And how many tablet devices do we have floating around your house?
Five.
That's a good number. And what social networking sites are you active in?
I'm on Facebook, although less active than I used to be. I'm on LinkedIn as well.
And I know you came from a finance background, a security background. LinkedIn of any value to you? Is it something that you want to participate in or you want to? Or what value does it have for someone like you?
I mean, I'm becoming more active. In my prior job, we were highly regulated, so we were blocked from using it. But starting to be more active, a lot of industry connections and things of that nature.
Last book you read was electronic or paper?
The last book I read was paper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is not going to give you good nerd points here.
You want to know what
you're
it was?
Close to, no, we don't care. We don't care what it was, you know? Even if it's about, you know, HTTP protocol or something. Okay, I'll ask. What was the book you read?
Paul Stanley's autobiography. He's the lead singer of Kiss.
That'd be unpredictable, I'll tell you that much. That's for sure. I talked about virtualization. I think if I looked the last 10 years, I'd see this virtualization as this big wave that swept over everything, and it's maybe enabled big data. We see cost of hard drives going down, but now we see the proliferation of sensors and small hardware devices all through the houses and everywhere else. It seems to me this is a perfect storm for security headaches. I mean, look at all these devices people put in their houses, control their lights, control their refrigerator, control their heating and air conditioning. This is a perfect opportunity for, I'll use a sexist term, for bad guys to get in, isn't it? I mean, this is really bad news.
It is. It's the big theme is Internet of Things, and it's affecting every industry, right? There's significant growth of IP devices that, you know, your home automation systems are going to be connected to the Internet. You know, cars will be connected to the Internet, more healthcare connection, and that just means, you know, the kind of attack surface is increasing.
I would imagine that at the Black Hat conference, there were proof of concepts where people were breaking into automobiles. I would think that'd be part of the show out there, huh?
There was a presentation on that. The one I wish I could have attended, because I would have tried to do it, was somebody tried to do a hotel automation, being able to control all sorts of different devices throughout a hotel, which they demonstrated.
And they actually demonstrated some of these there. If you look at home alarms as well, I mean, and so the good news is you have an ability to control what's going on in your house remotely. The bad news is you ain't the only one, huh?
That's right. Somebody could turn it off, right, and have easy access to your home.
Would something like IPv6 be positive or negative for someone in your perspective? I mean, do you welcome IPv6, or is that just add more headaches for security?
Well, I think you're seeing a lot of vendor solutions have to evolve to support IPv6, and I think we've made a lot of headway there. I think it just speaks to the trend of more Internet of Things, right? The whole IPv6 from IPv4 was about running out of IP address space, and it just shows you the explosion of devices that are going to be connecting to the Internet.
We had Mike Olson here about 2 months ago, talked about Hadoop and Cloudera and this whole concept of big data. Big data, big headaches for guys like you, security guys, or big data good?
Big data is good. And I think big data has its own play in security, right? Again, people want a look at more information. There's more devices that are providing information. And so, more and more data is being used in security that's driving more analytics. And, you know, I think an interesting emerging market over the next few years is kind of another wave of security analytics that a lot of customers and companies are going to want to use.
Yeah, I see one of the outcomes of big data is like with the data warehouse. Okay, we got all this stuff. And how do we make actionable decisions based on all this stuff we have? What is a threat? What's not a threat? Is it a persistent threat? What kind of threat is it? And I think what I see happening is people going the next step, which is maybe visualization and analytics, maybe not necessarily at the same time. But I would think something that you offer would have to have some kind of analytics and visualization where someone can see a dashboard or some kind of a graphical analysis of, well, in the last 30 days, you've had 32,000 or something like that, huh?
Absolutely. They're both very important, right? As we said earlier, having all this data is great, but data is data, right? You have to analyze it, and the analytics are important. And you'll see, you know, companies compete on the quality of their analytics and then, you know, visualization. So, you know, if you were to look at our interface for HawkIG, it's going to show you how many incidents you have. It's going to show you if we detect something and do an automated action, here's why we've done it. And I think, you know, over time, too, people are going to want to see more of, I've been attacked, show me everything that's happened afterwards, what systems were affected. And I think as, you know, this is not a new phenomenon, right? Visual is better than it's just easier, right? Presentations are better with graphics than with lots of text.
Now, the Pittsburgh Steelers have a two-minute drill. I'm going to give you my little two-minute drill here for predicting the future. The next 5 years for Black Hat, what's going to happen? What's going to happen with your company? Is it all going to be virtual? What's going to happen in the future?
Yeah, so I mean, I think Black Hat will continue to evolve. I think you'll see it become bigger and bigger and a little bit more commercial. And I think we're finding, you know, as a vendor, we have to attend that. And I think customers are going to increasingly attend. You'll see more, you know, you'll still see practitioners there, but I think you'll start to see kind of more CISOs. You know, I think going forward, as far as crystal ball, you know, going on the Internet of Things, I think, you know, the attacks we've seen to date, right, are on, you know, credit cards and financial information. I think you're going to see some major issues in healthcare. Interesting to note that personal health information on the underground goes for $20 because people can use it for medical fraud and getting drugs.
Wow.
I also think I'll go out on one last limb. You're going to see a non-conventional attack on something like an automobile or something of that nature, which could be really interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's much out of limit. It's almost predictable. Well, thank you very much for your time here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Todd Weller, Vice President, Corporate Development at Hexis Cyber Solutions. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.